and I would like to turn the conference over to our host with AT&T Global Media Relations, Mr. Fletcher Cook. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, everybody, for joining. I'm here with John Donovan, our Chief Strategy Officer and Group President, Technology Operations for AT&T. John is also joined by Andre Fuich, our Chief Technology Officer and President of AT&T Labs. With that, I'll hand it over to John for some brief remarks, which will be followed by Q&A. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Fletcher. Thanks, everybody, for joining today. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of questions about this, but let me just, if I could, frame up a little bit on the front end that I think will help you understand the technology that we're so excited about today. We call it internally Project AirGig. It's really for AT&T, we've had in the labs for quite some time been trying to find breakthrough technologies, and by breakthrough, it has to be relevant. In order to be relevant to the future, it's going to have to be wireless delivery into the home. It has to have leapfrog capability in the bandwidth that it can carry to intercept a voracious appetite that people have to consume data and to get it faster and faster. So in order to be future-proof today, it has to accommodate the sort of bit rates and consumption patterns of things like virtual reality, autonomous cars, and things of the future that are going to be hyper-low latency and very high-performance networks. And so in our view, this is, Project AirGig is a transformative technology in that it delivers low cost and multi-gigabit internet speeds using power lines. And unlike some of the other technology, it doesn't work through the power lines. It's a wireless technology that delivers over the power lines. And so when you look at its performance characteristics, it is a leapfrog over today's formula of how much it costs per megabit of speed and capability. So we're talking about multi-gigabit, and we're talking about low cost. It's easier to deploy than fiber. It can run over license-free spectrum, and it can deliver ultra-fast wireless connectivity into any home or handheld device. The last mile access is going to be flexible enough to be configured into the standard roadmap of wireless today, which is small cells and distributed antenna systems. So it not only intercepts a cost curve that has tremendous utility to the consumer, it also dovetails into what we've already deployed. So there's no need for all these enhancements to build new towers, and there's no need to bury new cables in the ground. And so the ability to operate over existing infrastructure is really conducive for speed of deployment, for cost of deployment as well. And the results we've seen from our outdoor lab testing has been extremely encouraging. And so what we're looking for right now is the right global location to trial this new technology in the field in the upcoming year. So as we envision this thing in the long run, it can be as deployable in a big urban city as it is in a small rural town, and can just as likely be a remote global location as it is a rural U.S. Location. So, you know, how do we get here? If you think about AT&T Labs and its storied history of its R&D mindset, this particular technology, we already have more than 100 patents. And as a matter of fact, one of the stimuluses for us to talk about this today is that we're starting to have people looking around the patents and felt that it was going to be hard to keep it under the wraps for very much longer. So we've had researchers addressing all of the challenges that have hampered what would nominally be viewed as similar approaches over the last decade. But if you remember, the things that plagued it in the past is that it had to be in the power line. It went to the home in the power line, and it had a high deployment cost. And so what we're talking about is the transmission outside the power line, near the power line, but delivered wirelessly into the home at extremely low cost. And so a lot of the challenges that have been hampering these deployments have been addressed here. So some of the things that were required to do this, we invented low-cost plastic antennas. They're devices that are located along the power lines. They regenerate these millimeter wave signals, and the signals themselves are going to be able to be converted and generated into a standard 4G LTE or a 5G multi-gigabit mobile or a fixed deployment. So imagine, you know, the delivery from a device on the power line that operates wirelessly, and it delivers millimeter wave or other spectrum that we may have, both licensed and unlicensed, and it can deliver standard technologies like 4G and 5G. So it, by its very nature, it is both a small cell and it's got the capability to deliver into the home. And these patent-pending devices mean very low hardware and deployment costs, but maintaining a very high signal integrity, something that we frankly have been working on for over a decade to try to get similar performance characteristics that you get over a traditional wireless network without a need for all of the power and the metals that are necessary to generate it. We're experimenting with multiple ways to send that signal either around or near those medium voltage power lines. There's no direct electrical connection to the power line that's required. That's very important. It is a wireless capability. It's near the power line, but it's not through the power line. If you think about it from a utility company perspective, you folks have probably already thought about that. There's benefits not only to consumers and to the traditional delivery of their service, but to the utility companies as well. Because while this system is in the process of doing front haul and back haul to deliver wireless capability, it can also enable a lot of smart grid applications for the power companies. It can allow for instance, for early detection when there's integrity issues on the line. If that might be something as simple as an encroaching tree branch, we will be able to immediately detect that encroachment, and we'll be able to pinpoint the specific location down to the line segment itself so that proactive maintenance can be done by the electric utilities. And so we can support the utility company's meter and appliance and all their usage control systems in addition to providing them that advanced maintenance capability that from our perspective, we don't see that industry has today. So there are benefits for the power companies as well. And that's one of the things that we find most appealing here is it really is a win-win-win. It's a win for us to deliver the technology. It's a win for the power company and some of the capabilities for them to build some capability from it, and then ultimately the consumer. And so if you think about this from a big picture perspective, what we're trying to do is provide connectivity really across multiple access technologies. And so as we look at some of these advanced capabilities like augmented and virtual reality, self-driving cars, telemedicine, you know, video, we've been watching it move down the curve to 4K, and all of that being delivered with a preference for the customer to be untethered and moving around, and if not wireless, then cordless, certainly without being tethered. And that's really what we're trying to do here. And so as a reminder, I mean, we have more than 1 million lines of our fiber deployed right now that are delivering gigabit speed. So we have a gig per second now available in 29 markets. We have been testing millimeter wave and the next gen fixed wireless. We're doing the G-Fast trials. And then we're deploying the 4G LTE Advanced that you read a lot about that's bringing the speeds up on the traditional wireless network. But we think you're going to have to continue to innovate the consumption curve and keeping the affordability for the consumption curve can't be acquired by simply installing new equipment that takes advantage of Moore's Law. We're going to be forced to technologically leapfrog that. And we do that through things like the Project AirGig, like software-defined networking, and we're looking for every opportunity we can to deliver whatever the state of the art will be to allow us to very affordably deliver the high bandwidth solutions that our customers seem to have an insatiable desire for. So I'll pause there and open it to questions. And as a reminder, Andre Fuich is with me here today, our Chief Technology Officer.
I believe we have some questions in the queue.
Yes, sir, we do. We'll first go to the line of Ina Fried with Recode.
So,
Hi, Ina. How are you?
I guess the first question is kind of the obvious, you know, all these technologies, when you hear about them, they sound too good to be true. They're cheaper, better, wireless. What are the biggest challenges beyond field trials? And then I have a follow-up.
I think beyond field trials, the challenges we're going to have, I think, are going to be ones we're going to really love sinking our teeth into, and that is getting 4G and 5G, getting the standard processes into this technology. And so we feel very confident the key components that you need, which is the signal transmission capability, the antennas, those are the big drivers of cost and performance. And that's the stuff that's brand new here. We love that. And so for us, the playbook of complexity is going to be getting it into an industry roadmap that allows for manufacturing volumes and all those sorts of things.
Cool. And my follow-up was, what is the time frame to being commercially available? And is it something that AT&T already sees as a part of its commercial roadmap, or do you see it as an option to weave in, but not definitely part of the roadmap?
I wouldn't call it firmly on the roadmap yet. We are really pleased with what we've seen the performance of. And so if you look at the traditional industry solutions, you know, and you say, you have 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. I mean, this is the we're saying that next year we're going to go into field trial. And so if you sort of parallel it, we went into field trial this year on 5G. So that'll kind of give you a sense of time frame.
So this is something that's out of several years before commercial.
What is your thinking on 5G, Ina?
Well, if we're talking wireless 5G, 2020, 2019, if you're talking fixed broadband, it's a little harder to say.
2018. Yeah, so 2018 for fixed, 2019-ish for mobile, year behind.
Maybe a year behind. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, your math skills are excellent. They remain excellent, I should say.
That's what my English teacher said.
Yeah.
And next, we'll go to the line of Brian Knutson with the Wall Street Journal. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I just want to clarify what the role of the power line actually has in this. You're talking, it's like, you know, over power lines, but it doesn't plug into the power line. I mean, couldn't you just strap this onto a light post or a billboard or anything else? And if so, then how is this different than other small cells that carriers are deploying that looks somewhat similar in terms of their size that they do use on higher frequencies?
Yeah, so Brian, this is Andre Fuich. So, you know, as John mentioned earlier, this isn't a technology that actually utilizes the actual power line itself, the actual conductive material. It actually rides right alongside it. And I can't go into much detail at this stage, but I can just assure you that the way it works is basically it takes advantage of the medium voltage power lines that you see across these electric poles. And that's basically how these wireless signals get distributed. And so what makes this unique here is, again, we're not tapping into the actual power of the line at all. This is all outside of that. But this is a very cost-effective way to quickly distribute these signals. And then think of it as a branch. As you go down these lines, as you serve these suburban, urban, even rural locations, it becomes a bit of a mesh network. And you can hang off there LTE or 5G, and all of a sudden you have a very cost-effective multi-bit network without having to dig up or build a lot of expensive infrastructure.
So it carries the ability to be a repeater as well as a distributor of the signal. And that's
Andre have described it as a mesh network. So everywhere there's power, you have front haul, you have backhaul. And because it's propagating alongside the wire, it's extremely efficient. So we're using plastic antennas, really low cost. So we have found a very, very clever capability to propagate a signal a very long distance with very low power. And that's, frankly, a lot of the expense of this business is how you power those signals that get their way to the street.
I see. So in other words, you're going to put one of these on, and then the signal will propagate along the wire itself, and then you can be a far distance away from this antenna, but you're actually getting the signal that's sort of reflecting off of the power line.
Correct. And it's not dissipating the way that you might think. It's clinging to that wire and very effectively moving alongside that wire, not inside.
I see. And so do these units need to have their own independent power then that comes into the units itself? You said it's not going to plug into the power line.
But no, it's not.
It doesn't need electricity to work? I mean,
they'll need to be powered, obviously, but it's pretty obvious inductive powering has been out there for quite some time, and that's one approach to power this technology.
Yeah.
And then it'll have to have backhaul as well. It will be wireless backhaul.
It's its own backhaul. That's the elegance here. It's its backhaul and front haul. The signal can be repeated from cone to cone. It can haul back, haul forward, and then when it distributes as 4G or 5G.
How many of these can you have out into a mesh network before it needs to eventually get back into backhaul?
Well, this is it really depends, and that's part of why we're doing these trials this next year, is we really want to see how this works in a commercial deployment.
Our expectation is going to be dozens and dozens.
Yeah.
So you could put one of these, you could have one backhaul connection and then put dozens and dozens of these through a neighborhood, and everybody in the neighborhood or whatever can be connected.
It's a one-to-many power line.
Correct. It's a one-to-many.
And it's still gigabit speeds off of the power line.
Correct.
How much reach does it have?
The reach varies. But it's as long as you keep regenerating, it can go as far as we want it to go.
I mean, away from the power line, if you're...
That's going to be a function of the spectrum that it's in.
Right.
Okay.
We're going to be able to distribute in unlicensed and licensed. We could put it over 700. It's going to be an electronics choice in the egg. So if you visualize a football that clamps onto, an end, and it does the distribution from there, then we can do that in 4G, 4G plus 5G. We could do it in unlicensed license. And so you would envision we're going to have to make some decision. We're not going to commit to any of those today. It could be any of our own spectrum. If we wanted to further the distance, then we would have slightly more power and put it over 700 megahertz. And if it's more about bandwidth and speed, we'd put it up in millimeter wave, which has less power, but it doesn't penetrate buildings as well.
And next, we'll go to the line of Roger Entner with Recon Analytics. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, John. Hi, Andre. When we look at the practical application of this, do you foresee that predominantly to work as backhaul for your cell sites, or as a last mile or as a distribution solution to for high speed internet to homes and businesses?
So good question, Roger. So we actually see it both. So, the analog in the old wireline world, we see it as both the F1 and the F2. So the F1 from the standpoint that's the backhaul. You can certainly use it in that context. But it'll be far more effective in the distribution, or what we used to call the F2. And that's really because you figure, to all these power lines running down alleys, touching homes, this is a very effective way to do this. And again, you don't have to lay any fiber. You don't have to touch anything other than get some of these devices up on the wires.
And would you be able to do that just like for as an AT&T, not as a technology solution, but inside your footprint or nationwide?
Well, this would have to be obviously with some some partnerships with the local utilities there to make this work. So, you know, again, we don't see this just as an in footprint play at all. We see this as something that could go globally. So really it just, and this is part of why we want to do the trial, is to start figuring out these relationships and partnerships to make this scalable.
And next we'll go to the line of Alfred Ng with CNET. Please go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to check. You said you guys are looking for a place to do a field test by next year. Is there a priority on any of these or any types of areas? I know you were talking about how this can be used in urban cities, rural regions. I'm wondering if there's a priority on any kind of location for field tests.
So we're looking at different types of trial sites, but certainly we're looking globally as well to trial this, especially where there's favorable regulation, because obviously this is going to involve a utility company. But certainly we're looking, domestically as well. And we'll soon give more information about where the specific trial sites will be.
And just another thing I wanted to check on, I've been hearing about this being low cost. Do you know if there's figures of how much this would cost or?
Nothing that we can share at this point with you right now.
All right. Thanks.
And next we'll go to the line of Aaron Pressman with Fortune. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Maybe 10 years ago or more, broadband over power lines was a huge thing, and the FCC spent many hours on it, and it didn't work out. It ended up costing more than people thought. I'm interested in how this new technique differs from what was being done, 10 years ago and more.
Yeah, so broadband over power line, as you correctly noted, has been around for quite some time. Why this is different, broadband over power lines was basically using the actual conductor itself. And these were in frequencies, very low frequencies in 100 megahertz range. And with all the, the step down, step up that would have to happen going around transformers, it made it, not that cost effective. But probably more importantly, they couldn't get the speeds out of that technology that, we're seeing today with the technologies we're deploying today. So our technology here, what's different, obviously, is we can actually deliver into gigabit, the gigabit range. And that's why we believe this is such a game changer here and why it's revolutionarily different from the old BPL technologies that most people are familiar with.
I'm gonna go ahead and close, if that's okay. Thanks for being on the call today. We're excited about this technology. We, as I mentioned, we've been at this for quite some time. We feel that, behind every leapfrog is a lot of failed attempts. So I understand that when you look and you say, okay, you put broadband and power lines in the same sentence, there's a tendency to yawn. So I just want to reemphasize, if you will, some of the things that make this different. First of all, it's not reliance on going through the power lines. It's near the power lines. The propagation characteristics of this are unique from anything we've seen before as far as the ability to send a signal down the line at a very low cost without having to deal with the complexities that Andre talked about, a step up, step down, and going through transformers. We're able to use a wide range of spectrum, both owned and or licensed and unlicensed, and both low band and high band spectrum, which means we can trade off which type of service, and we can do very high bandwidth applications. And so we are not talking about a technology trial that we're raising our hand and saying, hey, we got this to work. We actually have built the components. Our innovation doesn't include just how we send a signal. It also includes the antenna technology, which is unique, and it's plastic, which makes it really low cost and very, very capable. And so it's unique in it, both its design and then its deployment capability. We've had it up and running. We've been running 4K TV and cameras and things on campuses of owned facilities for quite some time now, and we're saying that we're ready to move into the field. And when we say move into the field, we're not talking about moving in footprint where we have to do construction projects to get space and power in front hall and back hall. We're talking about potentially going into an area that has simply power lines and may, in fact, the trade-offs we're thinking about in making the decision on which topology we want to take on is things like, would we be better off going somewhere that has no broadband or somewhere that has broadband that is very high cost and low performance? And so those are the kinds of things we're looking at. Andre hit on the key point is we're looking for trial areas where we think we can move speedily, we can learn a lot, but we have, you know, favorable regulatory environment. And so we're mining through that right now. So we're excited about this technology. We feel that it has an opportunity to give us some performance and economics that isn't on the horizon right now. It is a leapfrog over what we have, and it's an improvement over what we see. And I think that's why we're so excited about it. And we really look forward to updating you folks over time as we pick our location and then, you know, inform you along the way as we start to see the performance in the field. We're very optimistic. So thanks for your joining the call today, and we look forward to some more dialogue in the future. Thank you.